Okay. Om Tat Sat. Let's just take a minute. Shanti, 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 om. Remember the first verse of this Advaita Makaranda is the prayer verse, so we're going to chant that. We'll chant it together, and we're going to chant all the way through verse number 6, which we're still working on. We probably won't continue to do this, but we'll always chant the first verse. But I just want you to get used to chanting Sanskrit, and also these verses are something that some people memorize, this particular little booklet. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdiye Namaha Anantananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtaye Ahamasmi sada bhami kadachinna hamapriyah paramayava hamatasiddham sachidananda lakshanam mayevo deti chidyoni jagad gandharva patanam atohan nakatam brahma sarvagyam sarvakaranam nasvatav pratyabhijnanat Niramshatvana chanyataha Nachashriya vinashanme Vinashasyat anashraya Nashoshaplosha vikledat chedas chinnabhaso mama Satyairapyanilagnyambaha Shastraikimutakalpitaihi Abharupasya vishwasya Bhanam bhasam dhervina kadachin navikalpeta bhacha hantena sarvagaha. So I'll break the sandhi on this. We did the first line, and we need to move into the second line. So, to break the sandhi, abharupasya vishwasya bhanam bha sannidehe Vina kadachit na avakalpeta ba cha aham tena sarvagaha. Okay. So just to repeat, abharupasya vishwasya bhanam. Just to repeat the unfoldment of this first line. Okay. The Vishwa is the universe. Means the universe is just a multi-varied in terms of nama rupa, and just the display of the universe is so infinite number of cognitions. That's one of the meanings of Vishwa. The other meaning is that which pervades everything. So everything that exists within time and space, and all the multivaried nama rupas, names and forms, that's the Vishwa, the universe, subtle and gross. So everything, if you think of it, everything that exists within time and space, internally and externally, internal space, external space, like if you have an imagination, the five elements come with that imagination, space, air, fire, water, earth, and all the elementals, whether it's an internal imagination or external. So everything that exists within duality is called the Vishwa. The Vishwa, by its nature, in terms of our experience, in terms of all of the prakriyas and the unfoldments we do, the Vishwa is that which can be objectified. So say if I divide everything into a subject-object relationship, anything that can be subject to subject-object relationship that can be objectified, that means it exists within time and space and belongs to the Vishwa. But by the very fact that it can be objectified, it itself is not self-luminous. In other words, it needs to be known. So because it needs to be known to shine, right, it depends upon consciousness for its knownness, which means it itself is not a luminary. Okay, so it itself is not consciousness. It depends upon consciousness. Myself as the subject, as conscious being itself, I don't depend upon consciousness. I am consciousness. Right? There's no dvaita, there's no duality like that where I have to objectify myself in order to have a self-experience. My self-experience is because I am conscious being. So the word they're using here is ba. Ba means light, or light is used as a metaphor for consciousness. Metaphor means, we don't think of light is not consciousness, but when we say the light of consciousness, sometimes we just say ba, light, to indicate consciousness. So here it says, abha rupasya vishwasya. For the Vishwa, for the creation, which by nature is abha, the unnegates it, right? Which is not self-luminous. It itself is not consciousness, so it is not self-evident. It needs to be known. It needs to be subject to a pramana, a means of knowledge. So it says, abharupasya vishwasya, for this universe, the whole world of objectification, of experience, which is by nature abha, not self-luminous, it requires bhanam. It requires consciousness, right? In order for this universe to shine, for there to be shining or knownness, bhanam, for the universe, which itself is abha, which itself is not self-evident, ba sannidehe vina. That can't take place. That bonum cannot take place without ba sannidehe, without some coming into the vicinity or into conjunction or coming near consciousness itself. It depends upon consciousness in order for it to shine. So here it says in the second line, kadachit na avakalpeta. Avakalpeta means it is possible. Kadachit na avakalpeta means it is never possible. Never at any time can this happen, right? For something which itself is what we call jada, which is not self-evident. For that thing which we, jada, inert, so to speak, not self-luminous, self-evident, never at any time can it present itself by itself. It needs to come into contact with consciousness in order for it to be known. Okay? And if it's something that cannot be known, we have no way of even assuming that it exists, right? Because there's no way of it appearing before you. Without consciousness, for something that is jada, means inert, there's no way of it presenting itself to you, Right? So unless it comes into contact, as though, with consciousness. So kadachit na never avakalpeta, is it possible, right, for this universe, which itself is not self-evident, to shine, to appear, to be manifest, to be known, unless it comes into the vicinity, comes into contact with consciousness. Bhadit's here. I'd like him just to come in.
Oh.
Yeah. He can sit in a chair and just... Hey, Bhadit. You're just in time for this class. Have a seat. Welcome. You're like him, you know about it. It's okay. Oh, I'm upset. So then having said that it there's no possibility, kadachit, we're on verse 6, second page. Abharupasya vishwasya bhanam vasa nidehe vina kadachin na avakalpeta. There's no possibility, never at any time, can something which is inert present itself. Right? Because it has no consciousness to present itself. Consciousness always presents itself just by its swarupa. It is self-evident. Nothing else is self-evident. So everything else must come into consciousness. Now, then having said that, bacha aham. And I am that ba. And I am that consciousness. Therefore, therefore, sarvagaha. I'm all pervasive. Okay. It's a really beautiful verse. It's a beautiful little piece of logic. But just think about it. The whole, which what's been said here, the whole Vishwa, the whole universe, which means anything that I can objectify, by the mere fact that it can be objectified, it itself is jada. It itself is not consciousness. Right? Consciousness is its own experience. It doesn't require consciousness to be known. But in the world of experience, in the world of Ishwara, in order for something to be known, it must either be consciousness and therefore self-evident, or be in the vicinity of consciousness in order for it to come into contact with the knownness, the self-evident nature of consciousness, and then it itself actually takes on that knownness. That's a different next verse. Okay. So it says there, so I am that consciousness. But what part of me is that consciousness? Right? The one that is that consciousness is not the one that can be objectified. Those parts that can be objectified. Because those parts need to be objectified in order to be known. Like, I'm not walking around with this body always objectified. Sometimes I'm lost in my mind, sometimes I'm reading a book, sometimes I'm lost in conversation, or whatever, and then I come back to a cognition of my body. Yeah? Or of, you know, the vritti, talking about your mind or your emotions, they have to be, you have to be present. That vritti has to be there, right, in order for it to be known. And in our experience, we have one vritti, thought modification, replaced by the next, replaced by the next, replaced by the next. But I only know one at a time. I only know the one that is there. Now, through memory, I can bring these vrittis back, and I can circle around these vrittis and build a whole web of these, interconnected web of the vrittis, but I'm only, the only ones that are known to me are the ones that are immediately present to, illumined by conscious being, illumined by me. I am the luminary. Whatever, that is me. I am the conscious being. I am not jada. I am not inert. I am, you know, I am not inert. If I were inert, then I'm not there, right? The only way something which is inert, which itself is not self-evident, to be there, to be part of the world of experience, it has to come into the vicinity or come into contact with conscious being. So now, if I understand that, my own being is not objectifiable. Right? You can objectify the body and the mind and the sense organs, and all of the thoughts and moods and emotions. You can objectify the I thought. But yourself, you simply are. Yourself, the conscious being that you are, is simply self-evident. There's no objectifying you, nor is there any need to objectify you. Right? Because the self-experience, that's what we mean by self-evident. You are not an object to yourself. You don't have a subject-object relationship with yourself. You have a subject-object relationship with anything in the Vishwa, in the universe, which includes the body, mind, sense organs, moods, emotions. There's not a subject-object relationship with you. There's just the self-evident nature of your being, self-shining. It really means if you remove the whole universe, it is totally irrelevant to your self-experience. The universe is not giving you the me experience. The self, the conscious being, is its own experience, and it's totally independent of the universe, where the universe, for it to be, is totally dependent upon me. Because it's jada. Jada means it has no self, it's not self-evident. That means it's totally dependent upon a pramana to be known. It's kind of an interesting situation. So, now it says, since I am that consciousness, therefore I am sarvajna. Sarvagaha, sorry. We have two words, sarvagaha, sarvagnyaha. Sarvagaha means it has gone everywhere. Gah. Gaha from gum, sarvagam, sarvagaha, means all pervasive. Now, why would that be? Because the whole universe is subject to being known. Anything objectifiable is subject to being known, to being and to being known. For to be known, to be manifest, to appear, it requires consciousness. Right? It must come into contact with consciousness. I am not part of the Vishwa to be objectified. If I'm objectified, then that part that's objectified is dependent upon me. But I'm not dependent upon anything. So first of all, I'm not an object within the Vishwa. But it means that the self that's not an object within the Vishwa is the self-evident consciousness because of which the Vishwa, the universe, is known. The knownness of me, if I say I am self-evident, means myself is self-evident, it is known. It's known without a knower. Right? That's what we mean by self-evident, self-shining. So if I can use the word, it is self-evident, self-shining, it is known without a knower. Does that make sense to everybody? If I say self-evident, it is known without a knower, because it's self-shining. That knownness, which is its swarupa, is its nature, is the knownness which all vrittis enjoy. This thought is known, this thought is known, this perception is known, this wall is known. There really is the vrittis, the maya, which is all maya, for those who know maya. The maya means all that which is mitya, the dependent, that which is responsible for this projection of nama rupa. Itself doesn't have knownness. Itself is not self-evident. But the knownness, which is my being, it enjoys completely when it is there. That's what we call, as we'll see in the next verse, we call anyonya adhyasa. There is an adhyasa, a superimposition where the knownness, the self-evident nature of the Atma, is superimposed upon the mitya, upon the maya, nama-rupa, upon the maya name and form, and then the maya name and form is superimposed upon the sat-chit, the knownness of my own being. So now, if we look out just into our experience right now, this is and it is known sat. This is sat, this is sat means is. This is, this is, this is, this is, this is. Though you have no... If I were to say, well, what does the is look like? You know? You can't objectify the isness which you're giving to everything. Nor do you even think to do that, but say, now I'm asking you to think to do that. The isness is, that is, the isness itself is self-evident. Being itself is self-evident. And that means being by its swarupa, by its nature, is known. So it's never that something is, but is not known. It is and it is known. So we might as well just say it is known. That's satchit. There is no experience away from that. So I can say the all of this is enjoying conscious being, which itself is not objectifiable. Ben's here. Let's pull up a chair for him and let him come in. Yeah, that's right.
There's a chair here.
Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, that's okay.
He's just taking his shoes.
Okay, I just want to make sure he knows it's okay to come in. So the is and the is known is my swarupa. It's not being shared. We talk like that, but there's no sharing, really. So what is inert by nature is not going to become self-evident. And so it's not like what is inert by nature now. What is inert by nature becomes, you know, gets the qualities of existence and knownness. Because it's jada, it's objectifiable. But it's mitya, it's maya, means it has no independent being of its own. And so it just totally borrows as though, not even borrowing, it's what we call an adyasa. It is there in the presence of his knownness. And the mind, your mind, which is part of that maya, then is experiencing from its own standpoint is knownness, right? And so says, and so it says, I am that. But actually there can't be, it's like light and dark coming together. Shankara uses that in the Adyasa Bhasha. It's not going to happen. And actually, if you really just kind of understand this and look at your own experience, you'll see that the is knownness or conscious being is nothing is touching it, nothing is happening to it. The is knownness, but in terms of the manifestation of this world, there is nothing away from it. You can say, I am, you know, I am a conscious being, and that conscious being cannot be objectified, right? Cannot be objectified, and so that conscious being which I am is the is knownness, the amness, which the whole creation enjoys. Because the whole creation, let me put it this way. There is nothing inert. Because you can't say that maya is inert. You can't even say that maya is or has any independent being. And anything that you say as maya, if you try to dissect it, you can't find it. Right? Maya, anything in maya comes into being and goes out of being. That means it's bordered by non-existence. If you try to analyze it, it will be infinitely divisible. So this whole creation that seems so solid and real, right? It is solid and real because you are solid and real. In a sense, solid, not solid in terms of matter, but in terms of being. And so there's nothing more stable than you. So the whole creation, which is actually continually coming into being and coming out of being, enjoys the stability, the tremendous stability of your own presence, which is never shifting in any way, which is non-dual, non-objectifiable, so not an object within time and space. So therefore, since I'm the only one that is that way, right? I'm the only one as consciousness that is self-evident, I have to be totally pervasive from the standpoint of the universe, which has is known, is known, is known, is known. Because it has no is known or no being apart from me. Conscious being. Being is not objectifiable. Consciousness is not objectifiable to be an object in the world. So he goes on a little, another level of this. Ready? Verse 7. Nahi banat prate sattvam Nahi banat rate sattvam narate banam chito chitaha narate banam chito chitaha chit sambedo pinadhyasat Chitsambhedo pinadhyasat ratetena hamadvayaha ratetena hamadvayaha nahi bahanat rate sattvam na rate that are na ra naraka na rate bhanam chittaha achittaha chit sambhedaha api na adhyasat rate tena aham advayaha. So he says nahi banat rate sattvam. Sattva means existence. So because there is no sat, there is no being, existence, the state of sat, sattvam, right? There is no existence. So there is no sattva, there is no existence. It's not like sattva, rajas, and tamas. This is sat, was the tva, which makes it an abstract. So there is no existence without bhana, right? Without consciousness, without self-evident being. There can be no existence because what is jada cannot present itself. Right? It's impossible for something that is not self-evident to present itself. So who, if it is existent, who is it existent to? Right? It's something that absolutely cannot be known without consciousness. So how will you say that it's there? It may be there, but it doesn't know it. It can't know it. And nobody else can know it either unless it comes into contact with conscious being. Do you understand that? It's kind of a really neat thing because we would normally not think of this. But if something is itself not self-evident, and there is no pramana, or there is no contact with consciousness, there is no way for anyone, including itself, to say that it is there. So if it is there, we have no pramana for it, and it remains as an absolute unknown. So for all that we know, it is not there. But it gets more than that. It's actually more than that. It would also have to be something which is devoid of being itself, because being and consciousness are one and the same thing. It is being that is self-evident. And so if it is devoid of being, it's not going to be there. That's another thing to understand. Everything that exists within the universe, right, itself has no being from its own standpoint. And the reason for that is that there is nothing within time and space that is free from change. That's the first thing. There's nothing that is not free from change. If it is not free from change, that means it is subject to birth and death. It can be even the most minute moment. Any change is birth and death. So anything that goes through birth and death or goes through change means that there is a prior non-existence. It was not there before because it has changed and come into being. Okay. Whatever it is, it's coming into. So it was not there before, and then it goes out of being when it changes again, and now it is not there. Right. So that means every single experience that we have that is subject to change is bordered by non-existence. This is a huge thing because non-existence means literally it is not there. If it literally is not there, nothing can come from it, because it's not there for anything to come from it. Right? And so when that's the case, whatever we experience in the creation itself must be dependent upon existence. It can't have existence of its own because it comes into being and goes out of being, so it's bordered by non-being, and so nothing, it can't come from non-being and go, you know, it can't come from non-being. And so it must, in order for it to be, it must depend upon being. That's the idea. And so this universe that we call sattva, if we say something has sattva, the sattva that it has, the existence that it has, cannot belong to it.
Okay, so that's one issue there. Cannot belong to it because it comes into being and goes out of being. The other thing is that for it to appear, for it to shine, it must have consciousness. It can't be jada. But it itself has no being of its own for it to shine. And so not only must it depend upon me, the sat, it has to depend upon the sat, which is chit. Right? Otherwise, it has no way of, it has no means of expression, even in terms of knownness. Right? Because it comes from non-existence and goes into non-existence. So it has no means for being, it has no means for knownness. And so without bhana, the consciousness, which actually is the sat, without that bhana, it does not and cannot exist. This you have to take it a little bit further, because bhana, the consciousness and the chit go together. Both are non-objectifiable. You can't separate the one from the other. So it says, without, so this is, we're only halfway through the sentence. So the sattva, the existence, okay, now sort of go a little further. The existence down at the end of the line, the existence of something which is achit, you know, which is not conscious, which is not self-evident. So the sattvam achit, the existence of something which is non, which is not conscious, that cannot be known without bhana. That's not there without bhana, without shining. And the existence, and without wait a minute, this is complex sentence. No existence of the chit. But. Oh, yeah. Okay. First part is because without consciousness, without bhanam, there is no existence, right? There is no existence of that which is achit, right? Because it's jada, right? And it can't be established, it can't shine, it can't appear of its own accord, right? Because it's not chit. And if there's no chit to illuminate, no consciousness for it to enjoy, it's as though not there. We have to say actually it is not there, because it can't have existence itself. And without consciousness, there's no shining. There's no being known. So first it says, without bhana, without consciousness, there is no existence. And for something which is a chit, with something which is inert, and without consciousness, there is no shining. So the shining, the appearance of something, without consciousness, there can't be any appearance of anything, and there can be no appearance without consciousness. Do you see it? It's a little complicated. It's not really complicated, but the sentence is a little complicated. The existence of something which is unconscious without its appearance, without its bhana, cannot be there, and that bhanam cannot be there without consciousness. So the appearance of something depends upon the shining of it, the presentation of it, and that presentation, that bhanam, cannot be there without consciousness. So everything that we experience, everything, the very sat of all of our experiences, dependent on consciousness, or the thing is not there to be known. There's nothing there to illuminate. or no way for it to appear. So then it says, chit sambedha api na adhyasat rate. It says, but, you know, even this connection with consciousness, the sambedha, the connection with consciousness is problematic. That connection with consciousness also can't be there. It says, na adhyasat rate, without adhyasa, you know. Adhyasa means superimposition. It means that there is a mistaken identity, because how can consciousness or the sat-chit come together? In what way is it going to come together with something that is inert to make that thing be conscious? They're just, it's apples and oranges. The two cannot come together in any type of a sambandha, any type of a connection. So what is the connection then to allow me to allow all of this to be and all of this to be known? What is the sambandha means, what is the connection? How do you connect the consciousness with the inertness for the inertness now to enjoy the knownness of consciousness? How is that possible? Right? So basically it's not possible. Right? Basically it is not possible. This is what we... And so how does it take place? It takes place through adhyasa. Adhyasa means superimposition, where I am actually superimposing the self-evident experience of me, of my own amness and my own knownness, which is its own nature, my own nature. I am, I exist, it's self-evident me. That self-evident me is being superimposed by the mithya mind, the jada mind, right, onto itself. Superimposed means nothing there is really happening. It's not like the mind or the body or the universe is gaining the experience of conscious being. It is not gaining that experience. That experience is me, right? The Maya itself is assuming that experience to belong to itself. Now, how can it do that? How can it assume the experience of conscious being to belong to itself? It can assume it because in reality, the nama rupas, the names and forms that include this body, mind, sense organs, and this world, have no independent being from consciousness, and so this world is in effect not really there as any independent entity. If it was there as an independent entity, that would be a big problem. How is an independent inertness, you know, going to take itself to be conscious being? Whereas if it's maya, if it's mitya, it can take itself to be conscious being because in reality it is conscious being. Just like that good old clay pot. The pot is maya, right? It has no independent being apart from the clay. So in reality, it is the clay. But when we say adhyasa, the nama rupa, the name and form of the pot, right, thinks that its name and form is the clay. It, from its standpoint, it becomes the support, the ashriya. It becomes the ashriya for the clay. It will think, without me, the clay will die. Without me, the clay will die. But in reality, from the standpoint of the clay, there is no pot because the pot has no independent being. And so the universe is like that. Here it is. We experience it just like we experience the pot. We experience all the nama rupa. And from our standpoint, here's this body, mind, sense organs. You know, we take ourselves to be the conscious being, to be the existent conscious being, and everything that we experience is, and everything is known, right? As though I am actually something that's becoming known, right? It's becoming known. It actually isn't becoming known, right? Because the knownness is never not there. The knownness is the very swarupa, the very nature of the atma. That's what we mean by self-evident. So this whole creation, wherever I go, it is known. It is and it is known. But the is known experience is the very swarupa of me, of the Atma. And by the adhyasa, from the standpoint of the mind will say, because it as though reflects consciousness, it'll say, I am the conscious being. I exist and I am the conscious being. And so the existence and consciousness depends upon me. And I know that I'm finite. I say, this body, you know, I am a conscious existent being and I am finite. This body is subject to birth and death. And so I take the body to be the ashraya, to be the support of me, of conscious being. Or actually, it's not the ashraya at all. If this ashraya, if this support falls, it falls. It makes absolutely no difference to conscious being. But that's where we have to gain knowledge, because how can the mind know that when every vritti it has enjoys conscious being? So that superimposition is what is it's suffering from. It's suffering from the superimposition. Superimpositions aren't real, you know. They're not real because it means that I'm superimposing something onto something else. Which, when we say mutual superimposition, means from the standpoint of my mind takes the self, the Atma, conscious being, to belong to it, and it takes the conscious being, which is me, to have the qualities of the mind, right? So it's a super, it's anyonya adyasa, it's a mutual superimposition performed by the mind, not by the Atma. Mutual doesn't mean the Atma has a superimposition and the mind has a superimposition. It's that the superimposition is two-way, it's two-fold. So I take myself to have the self to have the qualities of the mind, and the mind, and the mind is myself. So the mind becomes the conscious being, and conscious being gets the qualities of the mind. I become the physical body, and the physical body becomes me, the conscious being. So therefore, I'm subject to birth and death. I'm subject to all the moods and emotions that are going on, whatever's going on in the mind. You know? And I become a limited entity subject to birth and death, existing in this also existent known world. Whereas in reality, I am the non-dual existent knownness, self-evident knownness, which the whole world, which lights up the whole world, which is the self-evident knownness that the world enjoys. So from the standpoint of Ishvara, the whole Maya Upadhi is known, not because it's known, but because it's Maya, and it has is-knownness as its very content, clay pot, right? That's Ishvara. So this whole infinite display of the creation enjoys conscious being, which is not objectifiable and therefore all-pervasive. And what he says here at the end, he says, this being so, tena aham advayaha, therefore I am non-dual. I am non-dual because there is no such thing. And when we say maya, yama iti maya, that which is not, that is maya. We experience this, but it has no independent being. We experience the pot, it has no independent being from the clay. We experience the ocean and the waves, like the universe of infinite count number of waves, all being contained by this ocean, right? But it has no independent being apart from water. So I would say, if I'm the ocean or if I'm the wave, I would say, really, I am the whole. I am the Advaya, I am the non-dual water. I am the self of all of the waves, I am the self of the ocean. There really is only me. There is no second thing. So this world that enjoys enjoys conscious being is actually not enjoying it from its own right. It's enjoying it only from the sense of the conscious being which I am. Okay. So that was a little heavy, but good enough. That's it. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.